Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. And ladies and gentlemen, I usually tell you that I am broadcasting live from Fort Lauderdale, which I am. However, I am not in the Uncle Marv studios at the offices of MB Systems. I am actually in my backyard patio, and we'll have a couple of pictures to prove it to you.
Pool's nice.
But, what was that?
The pool is nice.
The pool is nice. And I am here because I know that you have heard me say many times how I had a unofficial peer group when I started in this business. And at some point, we were going to try to get back together. Well, tonight, we did that. So I had them come over to the house. We had a good meal. Nobody is drunk. So I think we'll have a good
thing. Not for lack of trying.
But let me introduce the people here. I've got Adam, Bryant, and Sherry, but I'm going to let them tell you a little bit more about themselves. And we're going to go in that order because it's alphabetical and my right to left. So, Adam, take it away.
Okay. My name is Adam Kessler. I have a company called Eden Engineering and Compute in the Cloud. And we're a small break-fix MSP combo IT service company. Dealing mostly in the healthcare industry.
All right.
All right, very good. My name is Bryant Smallwood. Did you say Brad?
I said, yeah, Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah, Brad Pitt. Well, my name is Bryant Smallwood. I am fortunate enough to be a member of this early peer group with Marvin B. and Sherry and Adam. And I also own my own MSP. It's called Dynamic Network Support. We are a growing MSP here in the Tri-County area. We're focused primarily in the Tri-County area, but we do services, a little bit of international service and some service nationwide, with mostly with clients that are headquartered here in the Tri-County area. And we are looking forward to, you know, further growth and expansion, and just loving the fact that you got us all together. So
yes.
Appreciate that.
All right.
Indeed.
And Sherry.
So my name is Sherry Borick of Borick Consulting Group. I am actually a legal technology consultant. Most of my clients are lawyers or law firms, and I focus on helping them to customize, train, and make themselves more efficient, primarily in the practice management and time and billing field. So while I do have a large number of clients in Florida, because that's where I'm based, many of my clients are located throughout the United States, because with remote, everything is possible.
All right. And most of you know me. I'm the man in the van parading as an IT consultant and part-time MSP here in Fort Lauderdale. And these are the people that helped me grow my business back in the day. And, a question that we didn't ask earlier, although we did confirm that January 2001,
that's right,
was around the time that we all officially met as a group. Some of you I knew before, some of you I knew after. Well, I still know you after. but let me just ask, do you guys remember anything specific about how each of us met?
Oh, boy. I remember you... My first remembrances of you were at that computer salvage company. What did they do on was it Oakland Park?
You mean the American Computer Traders?
Yeah, American Computer Traders. That's where I first remember you working.
That was actually a computer store.
It looked like a junkyard for computers, to tell you the truth. But
that was American Computer Traders. That was my first official job in the computer industry, even though I had done a lot on the side and had been a tutor and worked in the computer departments at college and grad school. But American Computer Traders, yes, that's where I started off in the sales floor,
right,
and ended back up in the tech room.
I have no recollection of what actually brought us together. Do you remember?
Yeah, no, I'm relying on all of you to bring to remember this because I met you guys
through Marvin.
Yeah, we all met through Marvin.
But
do you have any recollection of how you and I first met?
So, Brian, here's the deal. This is going to be a little convoluted.
Okay.
But we met really because of Adam.
Oh.
Now, let me explain.
Sorry.
So, Adam had a client at Bahia Mar. Staff Interior.
Scaff, right.
And you had me, did I build their server for them?
Or
you sent me to do some work for you. And somehow, and I don't know if we can talk about it because of legal issues or whatever, but something happened to where they asked me to take over. And I said, you better talk to Adam. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. I mean, they were in your industry, basically, an outfitter, marine outfitters.
Full disclosure, Suzanne Scaff is a close friend of mine. We went to high school together.
Right. She was a great lady.
And, we've stayed in touch over the years, and now I remember.
So Adam was doing their network, and somehow they wanted me to do their network. And as part of our conversation, Suzanne was like, hey, Brian's getting into the computer industry. You two should talk.
Right, right. Very, very early. That is right. Because being in the yachting industry, Suzanne had a relationship with Smallwood. So it went from, as far as Suzanne goes, from back in the high school days. And then professionally, we had a relationship with the Scaff Interiors and Smallwoods. And so when I decided that I did want to make a move into IT as a career change, it was really, Suzanne was one of my champions. Yep. So that makes a lot of sense. So thank you for clarifying.
Right, right.
There you go.
I do remember. I always thought the Scaff was your client.
No.
Maybe somebody else's client. I got them for the same reason you got them. They didn't like their IT guy. And I got them. And that was back in the day when it was Windows for work groups.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
and DOS.
Yeah. Well, so that's how Brian and I met. Bork.
Well, Marvin and I had a joint client together. We had a law firm client that I was working with on the software side. And Marvin and I met and were, you know, just learning about each other's areas so that we would be potential referral sources. And I'm sure it was Marvin who said, look, let's get together with, I have several other people. And if I recall correctly, I want to say either the first or one of the first meetings was at Brian's.
We did several at my house.
At your actual house.
At your house, right.
Yeah.
Are you still there, by any chance?
No, just a few blocks away.
Just
a
few blocks away.
Right. We were in the house from 94 to 2013, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I remember you had all kinds of plans of building that place out.
So we did. We did an addition on the house, to make room for the children and such, and it was a great place. And
yeah.
Still drive by it, very sentimental, but we just moved a few blocks away.
Okay.
So when we started to get together, we were originally in Bryant's location, and then we moved off into more neutral breakfast locations.
Can we talk
neutral
about that?
Neutral as if I had a home field advantage by being...
Well, I want to say neutral in that way. I think maybe your family didn't...
It's worth 3 points.
I just didn't think your family wanted us to be meeting there as often and as long as we were. So it was a little bit easier to manage. And then we were...
Yeah, did you ever meet at your first offices? Around the corner from Smallwoods?
Right behind Smallwoods? Yeah. I think we did a couple, maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
Yep. Uh-huh. I remember that place.
Yeah.
So, but it was mostly...
600 square feet of...
Right?
You know,
Of 84 Diner, right? That was our...
That was the big long-term place we met.
Right.
84 Diner. Then we moved across the street to some weird little breakfast place that we were only there twice. And the reason we stopped going was because Boric... got into an accident.
Oh, that's right.
Because you had to go up and U-turn to come back around it.
Yep.
And somebody...
That was Lester.
Somebody ran into you or something?
They did, yes. So I remember approaching... We met, was it weekly or every other week? For a very, very long time.
I want to say it was weekly.
Yeah. We met on a Wednesday at 8:30 or something to that effect. And... Yeah,
in 2000, we had the time.
We did. It was a different time. It was a very different time. I was on my way to one of our meetings. I got rear-ended right before making a U-turn, and I literally walked across the street to ask one of you guys to help because you were all meeting, and I was like, I have a little issue here.
So we couldn't meet there anymore because it was too difficult a place to turn around. And to...
I don't recall that being the exact reason, but okay.
Sounds good. Do we want to make mention of the missing member? Do we want to make mention of the missing member?
So there was five of us.
That's
and
right.
For some reason, I had lost contact, and not to be disrespectful, I just didn't think of him, but Marco.
Marco. I have heard from Marco. He's doing a lot of traveling back and forth to Italy, but I still hear from him every now and then. I did some work for one of his customers a couple months ago.
Now, is he, you said going back and forth, so I, for some reason, thought he had moved to Italy and we weren't ever going to see him again.
It may be. That I don't know. He seemed to have been spending more time in Italy than here.
Okay.
But I'm not positive of that.
All right.
So when you say that Marco is in IT, it has a couple of meanings.
Yes. Yeah, the real IT.
Right.
Yeah. But one of the good things about our group is that we all kind of complemented each other.
Indeed.
Sherry, you mentioned that you were the legal software consultant, and that helped with us. Because
I think there were a bunch of different reasons that it worked for all of us, and I think in different ways. We were really before our time in many ways. Right now, it's very popular to have peer groups, and people make a living running peer groups of various kinds. And that was very much that for me, at least, because while I wasn't in the IT realm, all of you were. And it was a great opportunity for me to learn more about the things that you did and also bounce ideas off of you as far as, you know, should a 20 to 30 user firm be running Windows ME as a server? That just doesn't sound right.
I don't think even a single user should be running ME.
But. Yes, but it also gave me an opportunity to, where I could say, hey, look, I work with people. I know people very well that I could refer you. You're not happy with your current IT or your current people. And I know people that I trust that I can bring in.
What you just said, I think, was the probably cornerstone of the strength of our group, which was trust.
Right.
I think, you know, having trust in one another early, and I'll point out one difference of the peer groups of today with our early days. We were all individual one-man operations at the time. We were all fairly new. So we were so much better together.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so much better being able to bounce ideas off each other to say, what cool thing did you see this week? Or how are you challenged? Right. Than we would have ever been by just being ourselves with our own thoughts and our own ideas, trying to figure out everything.
Especially as we're getting started.
By a factor of five, we were better. It was really, really, really cool.
Well, I always tell everybody that, you know, everybody talks about how today techs are willing to share. Well, back then, techs weren't willing to share.
That's true.
Everybody was kind of like, well, if I tell you, you're going to try to take my client.
Right.
And the five of us got together and we didn't do that to each other.
100%. We were very collaborative, and that was, in the time, it was not in fashion to be collaborative.
We were hungry and thirsty for knowledge. We just wanted to do better and know better, I think. And it was, I think it just helped all of us to have people to bounce stuff off of.
Mm-hmm.
That was always a good thing. Still is.
Absolutely. And I remember having conversations where you guys would be talking about this new Windows 7 that was coming out. See, now we're really starting to date ourselves. And I remember all of you saying, not yet. Don't go to it yet. The drivers aren't there yet. Don't go to it yet.
My gosh. You bring back, you know, phrases like plug and pray.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen a lot.
Pray and plug is more what a...
Right.
Yeah, when we started, Windows ME was an operating system.
Just because you can call it that doesn't mean that's what it was.
Well, let's see. Let's start with DOS. Okay.
Yeah. Well, where do you want to start? 6.2.2, where, you know, DOS really shined.
Yeah, 6.2.2 because before, well, 5.1. 5.1. Okay. 5.1.
All right.
Cuz and then 6.2.2 when the book came out on that was really good. And then it was Windows 3.0.
Windows 3.1.
We don't count 3.0.
You don't 3.0
again. 3.1 is what we
counted. I used it.
3.1 and then 3.1.1.
3.1.1.
3.1.1 for workers.
For workers. Yes. Yes. That's right.
Windows for workers. That was big. Okay, and then it was Windows 95.
Yep,
we're not even going to mention ME. ME was I always thought that stood for mistake.
I only mention ME because of the many conversations I would come to the table with and say, "Guys, I really think that this firm should not be running Windows ME for this software."
And we would say,
"You're right.
Why do you think that? Why on earth would they not run Windows ME as a peer server?"
Yes. But then after ME was XP, 90, right?
No, 95.
Oh, it was ME then 95?
Yeah.
Well, they were kind of, no.
No.
It was 95, 90, ME, 98.
98.
Yes, then yes, XP. Yes, yes, yes. You're right.
Then 7.
Right. And then 7 for a long time.
Well, 95, 98, I'm, 7
I'm,
for a long
I'm just not quite certain that ME was before
I think 98. It was, yeah, I think it was 98 and then 95 ME.
Yeah,
95 ME. 98 ME XP.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Then okay. Windows 7, now Windows 10.
So I always...
No, Windows 8.1.
Oh, you know what? 8.1 was just like ME,
so
okay?
So here are the operating.
I run Windows 8.1, believe it or not, and it's solid. I've been running it for years, as solid as can be.
Okay,
if we could go back to our younger selves, we would say skip ME.
Yes.
Skip
8.
8.
I would have skipped 8 if
Vista.
I could.
Skip
Vista.
Yes. Vista. We forgot Vista.
And we did skip Vista.
We did.
We did. Yeah. I think it was every other one, if you think about it.
Or every third, I think. Yeah.
Well,
was
it depends.
A test that Microsoft was putting out when they had these interim ones just to see who was stupid enough to use it?
Well, it depends if you're counting things like Windows 98 Second Edition as its own little rollout.
There's right. That.
So I think a lot of these operating systems ended up were necessary architecture changes that weren't ready for prime time, but I don't think they could have gotten from point A to point C. They had to have B. And
right.
I think that's where like ME came in. It was architecture change.
Right.
It led to XP, which was fantastic.
Right.
But I think that's what happens when these...
Felt like a guinea pig, though.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Now, onto the server side.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because you and I started with a Novell.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Novell, yes.
I started with 3.15.
Okay, 3. Yeah, I remember that. I remember
then,
seeing those.
Then we
installed a 4 at our client where we spent the night on their couch.
Oh, that was the healthcare company. Was that the healthcare company?
No, that was law firm.
We're losing the younger crowd.
Sorry.
I don't know.
The moment, you don't want to talk about GroupWise?
The moment you said...
GroupWise
was great, and Novell was great. It was a great operating system. It was solid, stable, but then they went to NDS, which was their directory services, which was built on Banyan Vines. Mm-hmm. Sorry for the history lesson. And it was okay, but they had tried to advance it too much, and by that time... Microsoft was really intruding on them with 3.5, NT 3.5, and then 4 and 4.1. Was it 4.1?
There was a 4.1.
Right. My first experience with that was with Citrix Metaframe built on Windows 4.1 or 4.0. What a disaster.
Sherry, wake up.
You know, I was just thinking to myself, all I care about operating systems is will it be compatible with what I'm working with? And what about the system requirements? And that actually goes back to where I depend very much on the IT people that I work with, not necessarily the people around the room, but although we still have joint clients. But when I'm working, it's very important for me to have a team effort so that I'm not fighting with the IT staff who are, you know, needing to support the backbone and the network and the operating systems, because anytime that I was in an environment where I knew more than they did, then it was a time to bring one of you guys in. Because I should never know more than the IT folks.
Yep. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard for the last 10 minutes or so is how our meetings would go when we would meet. And we would try to bring a topic and talk about something that was going on, but we'd
end
up
a topic.
You have a topic?
Well, I guess, how about IP?
How about
intellectual property?
No. IP versus
Internet protocol?
Well, this goes back, yes, Internet protocol. TCP IP. Because we started off a NetBUI. Remember NetBUI?
Yeah.
That was Windows for Work Groups and 3.1. And then Novell was IPX.
IPX over BNC connectors on
every... With
10 base 2.
I retired my last 10 base 2 a couple years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because they had cable running
on
their
campus. I just had to look at my watch and see what year it was.
According to the cost of burying fiber was too expensive. Yeah. So
it still is for some.
It is. But they
sent out a quote for Comcast, and they had to do a site survey, and the infrastructure cost was $45,000 that they couldn't pass on to the client, so we had to move along.
Oh, okay.
So why don't we do this?
Sure.
So to give a little bit more history, let's each go around the table and talk about business then and over the years till now, how things have gone and how, you know, we've kind of gone in and out of each other's lives and each other's businesses. But what are you doing now versus what were you doing then?
Basically the same thing, taking care of small to medium businesses. There was less competition back in those days when we first got started, and business was actually significantly better than it is for me now. I'm sorry to say that, but mostly because I'm not a great marketing. Hello. I'm not a great marketing guy, and it seems to me a lot of, you know, I'm competing against companies that can market better than I can. You know, I have the skills and the knowledge and the experience, but what I don't have is the marketing arm, can bring in the new business. You know, what's her name?
Sherry.
Robin Robbins.
Yep.
Robin Robbins, you know, and her thing. I mean, I participate in some of the blogs there, and I've picked up some business from there. But, you know, that's a whole marketing approach that you almost need someone dedicated to do that. And as a single, you know, entity, it's tough to be able to be all things. So you got to, you know, take care of the business that you have. And it's difficult to grow the business when there's so much competition out there these days. And I'm not doing well at it. So.
All right. Well, we'll have to get you some people to do that.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
It's actually probably a good business to start.
Marketing. Well, a lot has changed for me, and I do fondly reflect back on our early days because I owe so much of you guys the gratitude for helping me start DNS. I think I may have been the last one as far as joining IT because
you had just finished school.
I had just finished school. I had just hung a shingle January of 2001, which happened to be the month that we started our peer group. So I was really, I think you said, wet behind the ears earlier.
You were a youngin'.
I was.
Yeah, but you were also the first one that actually had a business structure that you implemented right away.
Being a part of a family business since I had gotten out of the Air Force had gave me, you know, certainly the business side of things, and I understood that very well. And I've been able to parlay and pair that with the IT knowledge. And we've been very successful. I feel very fortunate. We've expanded, not this year because of, you know, well, it's 2020, but, up until this year, we had been growing at a rapid clip. We've, expanded our physical footprint to 4,000 square feet now. We, have 18 people on staff and, fully departmentalized into our help desk, our NOC, our projects department, our preventive maintenance department, and then all the admin stuff, which purchasing, quoting, sales, a full-time sales guy. And we're looking to do even more of that. I will allow this podcast to be the first time that this has been said publicly.
Oh,
but,
exclusive.
An exclusive. We will be... We have infrastructure in Charlotte, and we'll be opening our second DNS next year in Charlotte. So all that is happening right now. So very exciting stuff. My passion for not only IT, but also providing opportunity to more people, whether it's at DNS, is what drives me and what fuels me. And we're looking for 2021 to be what we thought 2020 could be. So it's been a crazy ride, but it still feels like it's just the beginning.
So for me, I have chosen on purpose to remain fairly small as far as employees. I have initially, in the earlier parts of my career, were focused on just a couple of on-premise solutions. And as of, I would say about 4 years ago, maybe a little bit more, as I saw the trend and where people were starting to really get more excited about cloud technology for practice management and billing and other types of industries, I started to work on transitioning there. And so now with COVID and just with a lot of change in the various software products and the various players in the industry that have really started to emerge over the last 4 or 5 years, I feel like I am fairly well situated to see what's next, because I never wanted to have, after having a couple of vendors change very abruptly and get bought and sold and whatnot, I said, I will never be a one product person. It is far too important to diversify, not only for myself, but also for my clients, to be able to have other things that I can work with. And so that's what I've done the last several years, is to gain expertise and knowledge and make industry connections and whatnot. So I feel like I'm in a really good place, especially with where we are now. There's such a wide variety of needs. There's the, I am never going to the cloud folks. And then there's the, why would you have a server folks, and everything in between. And that doesn't mean that, you know, they don't need IT. And it also doesn't mean that they don't need someone like me. Every once in a while, I think to myself, well, gosh, a lot of these products now have their own help desks. They have really good tech support. It's included in their subscriptions. Why would they need someone like me? And every week someone calls me and says, I don't want to talk to tech support. I want someone who can walk me through it, guide them, and give them the information that they need. So as much as I sometimes think to myself, gosh, will I, you know, is this industry going to be sustainable? I'm happy to say that so far I'm really doing fine. And it's always growing and always changing. And I think that's the important part, is not to sit still. My colleagues who have chosen to maintain one product or two products only, and then something changes in the industry where they're not, you know, that product isn't the right fit for a lot of people anymore, or they just choose not to learn anything new, they're not in a good place right now. So that's where I was, and where I am is largely the same, but expanding.
Yep, cool. Things have changed.
I notice when Sherry is speaking, she gets the most nods. You are so smart. You're so, yeah, we're all lucky to have you. And I mean, so you say things, you're very well spoken, and say things, you know, in a way that you get the rest of this table going, yeah.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
And that's why you get calls from clients.
That's right.
You know, it's funny. One of the things that I like to say a lot is I try to make it so easy that you wonder why you needed me, because what I'm trying to do is boil things down to whatever the concept is something that they can understand and take with them. So as a trainer and as someone who's trying to impart ideas, I want people to feel really comfortable. So thank you, Brian. That's a really nice thing for
it's
me
not
to say.
Easy to do. It's just not, it's not an
unless
easy
you're
thing
Sherry.
That comes naturally. That's a skill. I mean, that's truly a skill.
Let me translate that for you guys. Apparently we're not making her feel comfortable when we're talking about our stuff.
I didn't want to say anything.
No. I just feel like that's my job is to be that translator and to help people to understand and make the most use out of what they're, you know, using. I mean, how many times do you guys work with a firm that you implement some very cool technology that you think is the knees bees and you think it's going to be the best thing ever, and you find out that the firm is using 1% of what that technology could be doing?
Too often.
All the time. I mean, just look at Word or Excel. I mean,
it's a great example.
People don't know. They know just the very skim top of it. And not the most people don't know the real power behind those things, but it's, a lot of things are like that.
I have something to add, but I don't want to because our guest of Marvin has to give us his spiel now.
That's true.
You started and where you are now.
You know, I did tell you earlier, Brian. You need to listen to more podcasts because I share much of my life there. But here's the thing. This group was instrumental in me determining my path because I don't know if you guys remember when we had met for almost 2 years, there was a point in time where we were actually talking about forming our own company together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember presenting to you guys a sort of let's put our toe in the water and share space and share an admin person and then see what that was like before doing anything serious.
Mm-hmm. And then we stopped meeting at your house. And,
and really, that's right.
I thought I remember wanting to talk to an accountant.
Yep, we did.
And see how they would structure it for us because we all had our own clientele that we wanted to bring in. So, we never got past that point.
No, we didn't. And I think we kind of all realized that we all still wanted to be the chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we joined forces, some of us would have to stop unless we were able to diversify sections of the business that, Bryant was in charge of this and Sherry was in charge of that.
We didn't give that a shot. And I think we could have done that. I really think that we could have diversified. I think there was enough diverse skills that we could. I mean, Marco and you were kind of the hardware guys at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the networking guys. Mm-hmm. And you were the software person and sales leader, so to speak. Yeah. So
well, that... I don't know, I would say sales, maybe more referrals.
Referrals, for sure.
Well, yeah, but when you're working inside of a company, I would think, you were selling well, a software package.
Let's be fair, you're both right. Mm-hmm. Your referrals were his sales.
But there was a time when, that was a big thought pattern, and that really started to make me think, okay, what am I going to do? Because at the time, I don't know if you guys remember, I had come out of the computer repair store. And the whole reason I left that store was because I saw an opportunity that the store owner would not do. And that was to provide on-site service.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I didn't really know at the time what that meant. For me, it was just like, okay, people need me to come to their house or their business and I'll do whatever they need. But because of that group, I realized I needed to focus in on what I was good at. And yes, I was good at the hardware, but I was also just good enough at the networking for the smaller businesses, the small and medium-sized businesses that didn't want to pay for a full-time network administrator. And I thought, that's what I can do. And at the time, I think, Bryant, I think you had just started hiring your techs. And you were the first one to jump into the quote-unquote MSP world before MSP was,
Yeah, we were early adopters. It was 2005 when we kind of made a big investment. We had been in business for 4 years. I was still a small firm at the time, I think three people, and decided that it really took a leap of faith at the time. Because it wasn't new. Being an MSP wasn't brand new. There was platforms out there and people were doing it, but it was early.
Yeah,
it was definitely early. I remember that was one of the last times we met. You had introduced it to the fact that you had done this big purchase. like, I don't know, $5,000 or $8,000 for the licensing. And that was like, oh, my God, that's so much money.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I remember when Marvin got his sniffer thing, and he was so proud of it. Because it was like
the first fluke, people.
You still have the best tools.
Yeah.
And I remember when you went to that firm, and I said, "Can you? You got to come in, and you got to." It was the ME firm, okay, guys. It was the ME firm, and I sold them on the firm. I sold the firm on someone's going to come in and do a network evaluation. And what I really, my ulterior motive was to say, and then we're going to get your other IT firm out because they just weren't doing a good job for them.
Yeah.
And I think it was the first time I actually planned on getting someone fired.
And it worked.
It did, yes, because you were able to show them all the areas that needed improvement.
It took a while.
It did. But it did happen.
It did happen.
Well, I have used Marvin in... Not to get someone fired, but I've used him to do infrastructure analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, a couple of years ago, with my Church of All Nations customer.
Yep.
Ancient infrastructure, including the 10Base 2 stuff. Well, I think we were beyond that by then, but the architecture and the infrastructure was just ancient, and we were going to a VoIP system. And we needed to know that all those things worked for the POE, right, and everything like that. So Marvin, with his fluke army, came in and did a fantastic bang-up job.
I only wish that the tool I have now was the tool I had then, because...
You'll say that a year from now.
That is true.
When they give you the next greatest thing that comes off the line.
Well, we'll find out next month when I approach them about sponsoring the next series of network... network talks, because we are doing that. But those tools have really, you know, those tools basically set my path, and being able to be the on-call network administrator. And, you know, I dabbled with a couple of techs of my own who were good guys, good people. Even had a gal who was a pretty good tech, but wasn't really self-motivating. So if I didn't have something for them to do from 9 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon, it was tough. And, you know, for me, I hadn't jumped on the RMM or the MSP platform 100%. But I started to do some remote stuff when I'm thinking, okay, I can do this faster than sending the tech, so I'll just do that.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, I ventured into SolarWinds.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm doing a lot of the MSP stuff now as well, and doing pretty good.
Oh, you've gone to SolarWinds?
Yeah, we've talked about that. Yeah, I have SolarWinds as my management.
Was it under a different name before?
So it was.
Oh.
It was actually...
Wasn't it Max something?
Max Focus is what it was. And then before that, it was GFI Hound Dog. And before that, it was something else. But I came in as Max Focus, and then they got bought and rolled into SolarWinds, which was actually a merger of SolarWinds and Enable.
Okay.
And
SolarWinds is making a very concerted push in the MSP.
Whether they're a public company now.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, they one of the tools that I use is DNS reports, mm-hmm. DNS stuff.
The website, yeah.
Which is also now owned by SolarWinds.
Yep.
I use it all the time when I'm checking DNS for and mail and things like that.
You should use DNS to check DNS.
Never fails.
It's too confusing.
Yeah.
So sorry, Sherry, we went to talk about stacks because that's what us guys do, you know.
I am used to the technical jargon and the off tangent conversations.
So how many Datto appliances do you have?
Zero.
Yay.
Good for you.
How many what?
Oh, you know Datto.
BDR.
Okay.
You have no idea what that is, do you?
I do.
Oh, stop picking on Cherry.
I do. Thank you very much.
All right. So I think that's pretty much gotten us up to speed. Yeah, Adam, so I know you keep trying to add something. What are you thinking now?
No, I just wanted to, are you happy with your Datto stuff?
Funny you should mention that. So I am actually right now evaluating two different BDR products.
Do you want to expand on
Sure,
that?
I'll tell you. So Axient is one.
Okay.
And Servosity is another.
Okay.
And Axient was presented to me by another MSP that I had on the show recently, who they left Datto to go to Axient, and pretty much they're doing the same thing, but they're hosting their data backups in their own private cloud. And what they did was they just basically rolled the Axient software accidentally on top of the Datto boxes, and they're saving a ton of money, because the real problem with Datto is not the technology. It's not the software. It's a solid product. They've got great support. But the prices just keep going up and up and up, and it's just getting to be ridiculous. I have one client.
I think there's a resource issue, too, on a lot of Datto stuff. If you really need to be work in, for an extended period in your DR.
Well, definitely if you're using the lower-end products, yeah. You have to have the high-end Cirrus line. Okay. And it's just got to be beefy, because if you're going to do if you're going to run a backup server in the VM, mm-hmm. it's got to be able to do sure. that. So,
Do you think these other vendors can actually run multiple VMs as in their backup?
Well, device? That's why I'm evaluating.
Okay.
And I'm looking at them from a cost standpoint and from a performance standpoint.
Right.
So I've got both of those up. Now, granted, nobody's really going to beat Datto. And one of the things that I've loved about Datto is that if there's ever an issue, I just call them and they take care of it.
Right. But you know what? I have to say that this is a very similar trend in the practice management and time and billing industry, is this idea that you're going to subscribe to a service and then be beholden to it because either your data is there or your backups are there or whatever it is. And then at some point, cost becomes an issue because you've got you're on a subscription and there is nothing to stop anybody in the industry from saying, we're going to go up 10%. We're going to go up 20%. We're going to go up 10% or 20% per year.
Yeah.
But it depends on how sticky the product is and if their corresponding service and the what they're giving to you is worth it. Because
right.
I see that over and over in the practice management and the time billing industry where, you know, they get you on a subscription and then all of a sudden the prices start going up exponentially.
And that happens to us all the time, especially as managed service providers, because customers are seeing what we do as a commodity.
Right.
Where, you know, well, this company can do the same thing as you do at half the price.
Right.
And it's trying to present to them what's the real value in that, which is how I've been able to stay with Datto, because I've been able to show them, look, you know, the support is there, the backup is there. When your server went down, did you even notice? They're like, when did our server go down? And I'm like, yeah, 2 months ago, and we ran for a week off the backup, and you know those types of things. However, when a company's paying $1,000 a month for backup, and somebody's coming to them saying, well, we can do that for $200, mm-hmm. you do have a fight because the customer may not be able to always understand what you're saying as the perceived value.
Right.
Because they're like, well, you're just talking technical to make me think that. So, you know, why don't we try it and see?
Well,
so that's the thing. That's why I'm evaluating these, to see if I need to provide another option. I want to be the one providing that option. I don't want them going somewhere else.
I agree 100%. But it's also important for you to be the trusted advisor and for them to realize you're the trusted advisor.
It is important. But I'm just saying there's a point in time where people think that, well, we've gotten comfortable with you, so we just need to poke around and see. So there are times where that works in our favor, that they just like, look, we trust you, do what you need to do. You know, we'll pay what we need to pay because we don't want to lose our data. And then there are people, well, we've never lost data, so can we at least save money?
Yeah.
You know,
and there's, you know, every company is so different. Every company's got a different budget. Every company has a different tolerance for downtime.
Right. Right.
You could be talk to a client that says, you know, well, it would be okay for us to be down for 3 days, the smaller companies, you know, and we would, you know, that's not going to that's not going to, you know, be a big deal for us based on paying $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, you know, we'll choose to understand that we may need to get some hardware in and get it rebuilt and get it restored. You aren't going to have that instant failover. And then there's companies who BUDR is not even enough. They want HA, and they want to, you know, they want to set up server clusters and set up DAGs for Exchange.
We don't ever want to be down.
Right. So
no excuses. Wait.
Stop for a second. I know what BDR is. What is HA?
High availability.
Thank you.
On the same vein, you were talking about, you know, platforms that you have that are being attacked by other vendors looking to make inroads. You've got to see that on the MSP side with your platform that you're in, the Kaseya, right? I mean, you must be getting solicited all the time by the myriad of different providers that are out there wanting to say, well, we can save you this and we can do that. And we can...
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah, solicitations are not, I mean, yeah, the amount of time that I would have in my day back, right? If I, most of them get into the spam folder, but, you know, and most of them, you know, I can, but yes, there's, it's constant. It's constant. Right. Yeah. So you just have to,
Are you ever tempted to make a move from your current platform?
Yeah. So here's an interesting, you know, position that I am in right now. I am straddling the 300-pound gorillas. At least this is the way I perceive this. So I am in ConnectWise.
You're in ConnectWise as well.
Which is the fantastic PSA. And then I'm in Kaseya, fantastic RMM. Both of them have now trying to take market share from the other, right? Kaseya is now going PSA with a lot of different tools and options, and they're just trying. And they have been in a big acquisition mode, and every day there's a new product, it seems like. Not every day, but... And their suite is growing, and they're doing lots of integration, but ConnectWise is doing the same exact thing.
Yep.
So now I do have to wonder what the gained efficiencies would be, especially considering that I'm, you know, really getting scalability minded, and so what efficiencies will we gain by going with one platform that natively integrates the PSA and the RMM. So that is going to be, I mean, while we're growing during 2021, I will be taking some time to evaluate the other sides of each of those platforms to see which would integrate better. And I'm be visiting some conferences and hopefully even, you know, talking to other MSPs.
Right. I imagine, it's got to be I'm a little guy and I'm getting it from everywhere myself.
Yeah.
I've got, they're offering free AirPods for, I can't even remember the name of the company, but you know, it's a known company. It just escapes me right now, but you know, they're really desperate to get you on the phone and talk to you. My practice, I've been using like PRTG, we mentioned for that does my monitoring of my networks. And I like that. I also use, because I'm a Zyzel shop, I'm using their Nebula Cloud to manage and monitor and administer networks that are running with Zyzel equipment, both Wi-Fi and routers. I don't see a whole lot of value for managed switches yet. Are you doing managed switches that you're actually doing a lot of management on ACLs and stuff like that?
Not a lot of ACLs, but certainly a lot of VLANing.
But that's not a huge burden to do.
Well, the VLAN portion, but to truly see into a switch, I'm all managed.
Did you say VLANing is not a big deal to do remotely?
No, I'm just
because it could be.
Yes, whoops. It could be. Yeah. Oops, yeah.
I'm pretty much all exclusively managed switches, but not really for the things you're thinking about. It's for the insight for a lot of my tools.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's where I can plug in something and I can see the traffic on each switch port.
Right.
I've got the Domotes boxes. I don't know if we've talked about that, but my Domotes boxes that I'm deploying out to sites where I just have my dashboard now, and the Domote will actually look into the switches, and I can see what devices are on a switch port without actually having to drive there and plug in my flute tools.
Well, I can do that too with some of the tools that I have. So I just found that the remote management tools for switches aren't as important as for routers, which you're constantly worrying about from a security mm-hmm. standpoint and creating routing rules and firewall rules and things like that. You're not really touching your switches nearly as much as you are your routers.
You're not monitoring them like you would stuff. So that's
You're going to go and you set your VLANs up, and they're pretty static.
Right. To be able to see instantly what the traffic is, so if somebody's complaining about why is it so slow, and you can see the actual traffic on the port, not that I'm monitoring it, and domotes might be getting to the point where they set up an alert so that you can actually set those alerts in there,
right?
So that's kind of where I'm looking at it from.
Well, I can do that with PRTG. I mean, PRTG gives you the ability of doing that if you use their remote tools. So there's plenty of ways to skin that cat, but there is no one tool that is the only tool that does one thing.
Now,
certainly there are ones that do it better and ones that do it less with less cost.
Adam, it's interesting that you say that, because I have that conversation almost every day when I talk to clients, because if they are considering a switch on a software perspective, there is no one leader in every category that does everything together.
Sure.
And so, is Clio the right fit? Is, Centerbase or Rocket Matter or Zola Suite or any of the top
in the healthcare industry, it's the same thing. You have practice management and you have electronic health records. Oftentimes they're integrated. Oftentimes they're not. You have two different vendors in the same environment and there's a connection between them. To get somebody to switch, to be able to switch from one EHRPM to another is usually a complete and total nightmare. It means running multiple systems and manually over years moving from one to the other. It's a real nightmare, because otherwise it's hugely expensive.
Well, it's going to be, and that's the conversations that I think apply to both the IT and the software side is the management of transition and change.
Mm.
Because the management of transition and change is what we all do.
Yeah.
No matter what we're talking about, we're managing everything from their expectations and their budget and everything else. But it's also a management of how's your network going to be? How's your disaster recovery going to be? How's your, are you going to, especially now in the times of COVID, what does that look like from a remote access perspective? That's not related just to software or to hardware. It's related to how you run the business. And I think all of us are in that industry one way or another.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Some businesses you just can't run remotely, like a healthcare thing. I mean, now some maybe you can do some remote diagnostics, but if you have a physical therapy company or a chiropractor, you can't do that remotely.
Sure, but I had a doctor's appointment today,
and
it was a Zoom meeting. It was telehealth. It was, and this is a doctor.
My eyeglasses, all remote.
Right, and so,
even the eye test.
Eye test is completely remote. A guy on the screen up there with a computerized, remotely controlled thingy-bobby, whatever.
One better, two better, three.
That's it. You got it. Nobody in the room, but the guy on the screen.
That's impressive.
That is really cool.
That is impressive. But see, these are things, they had telehealth long before COVID.
True.
But it was not standard practice.
Right.
And now this is a doctor that I see, once every 4 or 5 months. And this is my second appointment with her on remote. And I don't foresee being able to go to her office anytime soon.
Well, was there blood pressure monitoring involved, or
Apple Watch?
It's true.
I mean, those kinds of devices can be leveraged.
They can be. And in my particular case, any lab work that was done ahead of time, she already had the results, and for that matter, I did too. So, there are some things that I think aren't totally different, but are being engaged in a different way.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you right now, that was a Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
they engaged a Zoom call for that. So it was just embedded into their, you know, chart system.
Of course, really? It was embedded into their EHR.
Yeah, you logged into their chart system. It said, click here. And I'm like, oh, it's a Zoom meeting.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
These are the things that...
I'm not saying... Well, my practice... Yeah, they're a physical therapist. I mean, they have to physically see people.
Yes, not every type of medical, nor every type of law can you...
Do remotely.
There's just no way to make all of that work. But I've got to imagine over the last 6 months, the three of you have had quite an adventure in trying to get your remote work, you know, people were working remotely, having conversations about data centers or ways that people can access their data remotely, the same way I'm having it from a software perspective.
Sure. I mean, it's been very volatile, shall we say. You know, there's been clients that have gone, you know, almost out of business on day one because revenue dried up and that was like a loss. And then there's been clients picking up the slack because they had everybody have to go remote and they weren't prepared for it. And that ended up being a lot of work. Local infrastructure, whether it was sending people out into the fields with their Sophos Reds, which is their SSL VPN hardware, so and trying to keep people secure and safe. It led to, you know, that's why I call it volatile. It led to a lot of extra work and a lot of, you know, good, valuable need for our services. And at the same time, you know, there were other, you know, companies that didn't fare so well. But I think that's just a microcosm of what's happened across the country. You know?
I'd like to ask a technical question on that because I don't have a chance to bounce this off of people. Because I use the remote desktop gateway, which is an SSL-based tunnel of RDP.
Right.
So you establish the SSL tunnel and you put RDP through that. It's so inexpensive. The only real – I mean, it's all run on virtual machines. You can farm it up and load balance it. There's no overhead of a Citrix or anything like that. It's very low overhead. But my tenant who was working for American Express, they had him set up with a piece of hardware that they ran out there, and he needed to have special connections for it, to establish a VPN between his desktop unit, which they provided for him, and their system. So cumbersome. It was a real a logistical nightmare for the parent company and for the end user. And a lot of times he would lose his connection, and their technical support wasn't up to snuff. And it was – I've had zero problems with remote desktop through SSL, through the remote desktop gateway services. And I think it's as secure as can be. It's 248-bit SSL encryption. It's very, very secure. And I don't, you know, I
well, if you get that, if you get that 248 to 256, you'd really be killing it.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, your question?
There's a lot of hoops that people are running through for high security that don't seem to be really necessary. So can you tell me what do you see the advantages of hardware-based VPNs for remote workers and the infrastructure that has to exist behind that?
Right.
And this technical support that has to be implemented to support those end users.
So in high, we have found, and I'm certainly not the CIO or CTO of high security, you know, we typically, you know, those positions are not something that is – DNS is pretty much the arm of those positions. So when they have a security concern, they bring it to us. They will also, you know, in a lot of cases, they'll also indicate let's say we take no personal devices are going to be on the network, right? So – and let's say that your issue – it's not just RDP. Maybe they need file access as well. So they need to be on their network. And so they take a company laptop, right, which has only company software on it.
Right.
And it's locked down. And right, they put it on the other side of a hardware-based VPN device that doesn't, you know, I think that is inherently more secure than, in my opinion, then allowing devices where their other softwares have been able to be installed. It could.
Yeah, but over RDP, there's no interaction with the remote desktop, regardless of what's on that remote PC, especially if you say you can't map drives.
Right.
You know, where there's no ability for them to copy and paste or anything like that.
Well, I think you have to decide, you know, whether or not RDP is the solution for you, okay? If there's a lot of there's a lot of situations where the local processing power of a PC is what's needed. High-intensity graphics, CAD stuff.
Right. Are you doing those kinds of things?
And even in the financial management sector, yes, we are. And even in the financial management sector where you're setting up a trader machine that could never do what he needs to do, he's got six monitors and he's got, you're not going to put that. There's no RDP solution for that.
Not unless you're running remote effects and a very powerful card.
The
host has got to be a Bulyak monster system. Yeah.
So those are the situations where a high security firm which needs a lot of local processing power, a lot of local resources because what they're doing requires it.
Right.
I think that's there's the fit.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So it's function dependent.
Yeah.
Application 100%. Dependent.
Yeah. Listen, we have a lot of clients. It's not like we're not only vendor agnostic, we're solution agnostic. Okay. That solution is not the solution we would recommend for the majority of our customers.
Right.
I am a big fan of RDP over SSL.
Right.
I mean, that's really it's
a very simple
I would put
and very
that at,
efficient.
I would put that at 90% of the need, you know.
Right.
But I just happened to mention the other things because those are the areas where people, you know, weren't as, you know, the people that were already doing RDP over SSL wasn't a big change for it. The people who were in offices using these high-powered machines,
right.
that's where...
Yeah, if you're trying to run AutoCAD on multiple screens remotely, either you're going to have to get directly to that desktop, you know, your desktop in your space, which you can do through those gateway services.
Sure.
And if they have multiple screens at home, you can support that. So I think there are ways around it as well. I mean, because the gateway, sorry, Sherry, we'll wake you up when we're done. But you know, there are
said mom and dad.
there's so much overhead with, you know, sending out hardware to the end user to enable a remote connection that I sometimes think it's counterproductive.
I agree with you 90% of the time. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're at odds here. I think we're in very much thinking the same thing.
I'm just trying to figure out when it's appropriate, when it isn't, because there is such a high overhead on supporting it.
Sure.
I
mean, I don't know that the supporting it. I mean, it's a pretty nice once it's up and running, it's pretty
solid. Well, maybe it's the because I've seen my roommate. He's had huge problems. It's constantly going on offline, and he's constantly calling technical support for issues.
Well, I'm going to give you an example of where sometimes things fall through the cracks, and that's one of the vendors that I work with, which shall remain nameless for their protection. They sent all their remote workers, all their tech support home to work remotely. Well, come to find out one of my clients kept calling tech support, hitting, you know, press zero for a callback and never got a callback. And I called in and I said, guys, come on, something's happening. There's a black hole somewhere. And I don't have 100% confirmation yet, but I can pretty much darn sure tell you that the press zero for a callback is some voicemail that's filling up somewhere that nobody is monitoring.
Somebody fell down on the voice side.
Right. And I think that's all those sort of peripheral things that get lost when somebody isn't managing a process properly, whether it's the hardware that you guys are talking about with the bigger vendors or whether it's, you know, the process and the hardware, how it's processing and whatnot. These are all the things that you guys have to manage. From my perspective, I can tell you that I just get the angry clients who are like, you know, my vendor isn't, you know, the vendor that we're working with is not answering the phone. Okay, let me go hunt them up and figure out what's going on. But it's all management.
Yeah, how do you get through to them when you have to hit that same number?
I know people.
It is my job. Sherry knows people. If you can't tell out there in Radio Land,
we're all nodding our heads.
Yeah. That's correct. It is my job to know the people that can make a difference, and that is what I do.
Yeah. Well, that and the fact that Sherry spoke to get us off of our left turn and to say, you guys are making way too big a deal out of this. Yeah. Your job is to keep the customer happy.
Yeah. And our job is to keep the people listening to this podcast right now.
Do you really think they are still listening and haven't actually moved on?
Oh, trust me. There will be one email that I get where somebody will be like, dude, talking about the RDP gateway. It was awesome.
All right. And then
there will be the email that says, why did you guys talk about that?
VPNs, man, that's the way to go.
So the MSP space, I love the vibe of our peer group. I mean, 20 years later, it's still such a great vibe.
It's the same 20 years later.
And one of the things that I'm picking up tonight, which I just love, and it gives me hope for the future, is, you know, we're all talking about what is the future for the industries, cloud, is it infrastructure, is it how is it going to be the vendor that has a whole help desk that includes that help desk support with part of the subscription fee. But I am, and like you mentioned before, when you mentioned that exact thing, you constantly get phone calls because people want to work with you and people trust you. And that is not going away anytime soon. And I think the MSP that tries to scale in a way that gets impersonal is the MSP that is not going to, will not have done it properly and will not actually have sustainable. I don't necessarily think that, I think the MSP model is rapidly scalable. But I'm also very confident in a way to do that without losing the personal touch. You should not call your MSP and get one of 50 techs. If you have a big help desk,
right?
So
like calling Comcast,
right? Exactly.
And getting one guy and calling back, and they have no idea what you're talking about.
Plus, they have a different answer.
And you also need, and you also need a company on-site tech. So, you know, without going, you know, scalability is possible. Scalability is something that we're very focused on. We're going to be opening our first shop in Charlotte next year, but. This peer group gives me confidence that it is the right path because you can't there's a lot of people are looking for more than just the guy on the other end of the line that doesn't really know them, doesn't really know their business, knows the software, but how often is there an ancillary problem, a problem that's, yeah, it's the software, but it's also because I'm running it with this other software.
Right. And
it's this printer that I just plugged in, which is now I could print. I mean, there's a plethora of issues that once you know the customer, know how they run their business, know their needs, that it becomes very sticky. That's the cult. There's a culture and that needs to scale with an MSP.
And the Active Directory infrastructure is something that someone has to know and understand.
Right.
And if you got people coming and going, that's never going to go from point A to point B.
Right.
Because they'll never know what the last guy did.
Well, Adam, I think you bring up a good point, which is the consistency factor. And when you work with a company and they know you and you know them and you know all of their integrations, as Brian said, and you know all the ways that the personalities of both the software and the hardware and the people and how they get together and how they work together, that makes it important. I'll give you a quick example. I'm a big fan of examples and analogies, in that I had a client of mine call last week, and they were considering whether they wanted to subscribe to an annual subscription to their vendor, the software vendor. And they said, we had a very interesting conversation. I really wish I had recorded it for Bad Days, because their concept was, A, they didn't want to call an 800 number and get a different person every time, not 100% confident that the answer was correct. It wasn't a price issue. It wasn't that the subscription was going to be too much or too little. It was that they knew when they worked with me that I knew my stuff and that I was willing to go the extra mile of, listen, I know you have a deadline. Let's start early so we can get it done. Or that I had proven my knowledge to them. And I know that transcends. It's not just my industry. It's yours, too. It's the proven knowledge and the concierge service. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're an MSP or you're a break fix or you're someone who is the hybrid, you know, outside network administrators, as Marvin likes to call it, it's the fact that you take care of them.
Yeah,
that's what business is. Someone once said, and I don't remember who, but they say that everyone is a salesperson. No matter what business you're in, you're always in sales. And I think, to me, it's you're selling your knowledge, but you're also you're selling your integrity, your relationship. And that doesn't matter what you're in. You're doing it for your customers. So that brings us all together. And you know, like Brian said, it's something that I think can prevail over the circumstances.
Yeah, I don't think our business is going anywhere for a very long time. And it's always going to be a bottom line issue for every person running a business. And if the bottom line is my problems can be fixed faster with more and provide us more uptime, more efficiencies with someone who knows my business and knows my users and knows what I'm doing with technology, then that's what we need to do. That's the more desirable position than more hold time, more let me tell me what you're running again. Oh, let me connect. Which, you know, all of the questions that have to be asked when you get a tech that it's the first time he's seen it. And when every time you get a tech, it's the first time he's seen it.
Yeah, when you understand your customer's business processes and you also are familiar with the vendors that they're using and have interfaced with them before and know the ropes. So for instance, in the healthcare industry, the EHR and the PM vendors, I constantly interact with their techs. We just went through an upgrade for their EHR. We had upgraded to a version, and there were some inherent problems, and we had to upgrade again. Well, I knew the entire process involved, and I knew what was bugging them, and I'm the in-house IT for them, and I'm the one that makes sure that everything is up to spec so that the software vendor can come in and do their things, and we can schedule a time. We can put up notices that, you know, it'll be offline during this time and stop access remotely when they're doing that. And the whole process of getting, and I understand what the problem is, and I can see if it's fixed, and there's client-side things to be dealt with after the server is upgraded and all those things. So if you don't know, like we were talking earlier about, you know, who uses faxes anymore. Well, the healthcare industry still uses faxes a lot.
So does the insurance industry.
Right. So they're getting fax things that are then being integrated right into their EHR and become PDFs that are attached, you know, to a patient record.
Right.
Now, they're not using faxing as much as they had been for prescription. They're doing e-prescribing. But that whole paradigm has changed, and that required them to do the upgrade that they just went through because there were new requirements in the software to properly do this new e-prescribing system. And if I didn't understand that, if they had a tech that didn't understand how it all integrated, they would have been a world of hurt. You know, they wouldn't have known, you know, they wouldn't have had anybody that could tell them, oh, yes, this is – all the clients are up to spec. All the servers have enough memory and enough space and this and that. You know, those are the things that you know, in continuity, I know, and all of the fat clients are Active Directory integrated and yada, 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 the whole ball of wax that has to go to meet the requirements for this. That's not something that's easily done by an outsider who's never seen the system before. You know, or is the first time, like you were saying, you know, on a system and doesn't know the Active Directory structure or all the other things that are integrated into the business process.
Wow. Just wow. I would like the audience to think about 2001. These were the types of conversations that we were having at my first unofficial peer group.
Really cool.
Everything old is new again.
Yes, it is.
No. So, hey, whoa. So who's calling something? I resemble that remark.
Yeah, we know you dye your hair. So
let the record show he was looking at Bryant.
What hair? There's nobody looking at me says I dye my hair. Terrible job if I do.
All right. So I know it's we've gone much longer than we thought we would, of course. That's what happens when we meet. And probably more because we haven't met as a group for so long. And a lot of catch up.
Yep.
So
it's going to be waist deep on the cutting room floor before this.
You'll find out that I don't edit. So every little remark goes through.
Wow.
So
good thing I was on my best behavior.
Even when you thought your mic was off. I certainly want to thank you guys for coming by. And on behalf of the wife, Kim, she's going to say, you know, glad to have you guys over. Glad that you enjoyed the food and the meal.
Kim, amazing. The food was fantastic.
Actually, it was the hospitality that was the best.
Well, that's why I brought her into the business, because she takes care of the customers for me and is always nice to them on the phone. And we will have to do this again.
Indeed.
That would be great.
And not, Bryant?
Not 20 years later.
No, not 20 years later. In fact, I think we're going to have to do something sooner, because obviously we're going to want to keep updated on your next location.
Would it be? Are you a traveling show? Could we set this up over at D&M?
Sure.
I'd love to have you guys over to the office.
Yeah, we can do that. Sure.
Are you still down by the airport?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we just took more space, but that's exactly
that building.
What
we're doing.
As you can see, my studio goes anywhere.
Did you
anywhere.
Not see him set this up this afternoon? Were you not sitting here while he set up all the equipment?
I'm trying to be nice to the listeners. They didn't see it.
So, yes, we will definitely travel wherever we need to do this and stay on top of everybody's story. Here's the thing that I probably should end with. One of the reasons that I think I was able to do this after 20 years is the fact that not only are we all still here, physically alive and doing well, even in the COVID, we're all still doing well in our business, or at least well enough that we're still surviving.
We're progressing.
Yep. And that's a testament to us, in a sense. I mean, you know, whatever management style we have, whatever our niche is, we have always been able to maintain what we needed to. One of the things that I've appreciated over the years is that we've always been there to help each other out. I think
Absolutely.
At some point in time, we have all leveraged each other's companies
100%
to help us, mm-hmm. whether it's to, I don't want to say make us look bigger, but mm-hmm. you know, there are times where, you know, if I needed a tech in a pinch, you know, I could call Adam. I could call Bryant. Bryant would send over somebody.
Sure.
I've even had Sherry helping me out mm-hmm. and doing computer moves and stuff. So
I can be trained.
So I want to say thank you to all of you over the years for, you know, being there, being amenable enough to say, hey, look, we're friends. We don't have to fight. We can do business together, and we can do life together.
Hear, hear.
I like to say we're colleagues, not competitors.
That is true.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, same thing. You know, back in 2001, I've told people about this peer group a number of times, and my one thing was that we realized we were stronger together than we are than we were apart. I find that's just as true today.
Yep.
Sure enough.
So. Yep. All right, folks, so there you have it. So the group that I have talked about over the years on this podcast, you have now heard from them, and at some point we'll probably do a video so you can see them.
Are you saying that we're infamous?
You are.
Wow.
Yeah, I have stories about each of you that you probably don't want to hear. So,
okay.
But again, thank you guys very much for coming out and doing this and for, you know, giving up an evening to hang out.
Yeah,
thank you,
appreciate
Marvin.
You
thank
for
you,
putting this together. Thank you so much.
All right. And those of you listening, thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. And we're going to do a lot more of these where I bring on other technicians that I've either worked with, talked with, or heard stories about that have been killing it out in the field and helping us all to make our business better, stronger, faster. And that's going to do it for this episode. And until next time, holla.